Safer sex.
Intercourse. Condoms.
Sexually transmitted infections.
HIV.
STI.
HIV. Sexual health.
Braces.
Treatment.
Prevention.
Condoms.
Sexual attraction.
Sexually transmitted
infections.
Contraceptive.
Sexual
health.
Specialist.
Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the podcast. My name's Tom and you're listening to the Sydney Sexual Health Centre podcast where we discuss all things related to sexual health. In this episode, we're going to take a look at how we can make health services youth-friendly. To discuss the topic, I'm joined by Anna Danielczewski, a peer educator as a member of the Peer Education Youth Advisory Committee, or PEAC for short, which is run by the HEART program in the Southeast Sydney Local Health District.
Super important to have good engagement in health services when you're a young person. Yeah, I go and see a GP and I'm like, well, never again for you. And just realizing how instrumental they can be in shaping a young person's healthcare and experiences and perceptions around healthcare, and especially then thinking about sexual health and feeling whether you're comfortable to then go out and talk about and actually advocate for your own health. It's just, yeah, a really, really important age group that I feel like is overlooked a lot.
I'm then joined by Stanya Shirota, who's the Youth Health Program Manager here in the district.
Really open and flexible, listen to young people and provide opportunities for them to tell you how they want to be cared for, how they want their services to be delivered. And I think just keep yourself up to date with current youth health issues, educate yourself on developmentally appropriate healthcare and the needs of young people.
So today I've travelled out to the University of New South Wales to hear more from Anna and Stanya.
So, I mean, what interested me working with young people is that I am a young person, and working with peers is so much fun, being able to learn from each other and the experiences that we shared, because it is so varied and you get to learn from a lot of people. So love working with young people, and I've always been attracted to working with young people. Sexual health in particular, and why I chose to work in the HIV and related programs unit that does a lot of sexual health, is that it's a topic that's just not spoken about much in formal settings, but spoken a lot about amongst young people. Lots of misinformation around, and a lot of areas which people may think are taboo in certain communities or anything like that, and just a lot of uncertainty as well with certain people. So I think being able to work in that space and make a difference and change people's opinions is so important, because most people have sex or will have sex in their lives, and a very normal, natural thing, and destigmatizing it is super important. So yeah, that's what attracted me to work where I am.
Great. Yeah, so I am the Youth Health Program Manager, as you said, for Southeastern Sydney Local Health District, and I've been in the role for about 6 years now. And prior to that, I've always worked with children and young people, primarily in the community. My background's as a social worker, so working a lot in foster care and with young parents. And now in my role with Southeastern Sydney, it's a strategic and coordination role, and focused a lot on implementing some of the priorities of the statewide youth health framework at a district level. And I'm involved in lots of health promotion, sort of work with young people, a lot of capacity building, supporting our health district and our services with their engagement with young people and with partnering with young people and supporting services to be more welcoming and youth friendly. And also a lot with consumers, and a big part of my role and a part that I love is working with Anna and the PEAC group, and I'm really inspired by the work that they do. And I think when it comes to young people, you can't be interested in youth health and working with young people and not be interested in sexual health, because I think it's such a critical area, and it's often the area where young people don't often have involvement with the health system, and sexual health is really one place where they will intersect with the health system quite a lot. And I think it's just an area where there's a lot of really creative and dynamic work happening in health, which isn't always the case. So I think that's where my interest lies.
Yep, fabulous. So Anna, you're a part of PEAC. What is this, and how do you support services to be more youth friendly?
Great. So PEAC is the Peer Education and Youth Advisory Committee. So PEAC is shortened version of that. And it's basically a dual role of when you're in the committee being a peer educator and a youth advisor. So as young people, we do peer education out in community with other young people to really do that peer-to-peer education to disseminate various information around sexual health and also other areas like alcohol and drug harm minimization. And then that second part of the role, that youth advisory role, is really where we get to provide input as consumers into the health services, and that's where the youth friendliness side comes of it, because we're youth and we're the experts in what's most youth friendly at the current time, because that does change over time. So a few different ways that we get involved with PEAC is through doing various consultations and advising on, let's say, resources, websites, flyers, brochures, all of those things. So any content that's touching the eyes, the ears of young people, we want to see or hear first and then provide some feedback on and really, yeah, put input into it. We also, pre-COVID, got involved in youth friendliness audits of different health services. So yeah, we have a checklist and go through and audit areas and provide feedback. And hopefully that feedback is implemented by the services. So
I guess those checklists help to identify some barriers for service access for young people. What are some of those barriers and the challenges that young people face?
Well, I think overall, the health system is super complex. When you add in the mix of a more complex or not really spoken about health issue and trying to navigate that, it can be difficult when it's the first time that you're trying to find a service or access a service. Looking for information of where services are, how to find them, is really difficult sometimes. Government websites aren't cute. They don't look nice. They're not easy to follow or to read or understand. I actually moved to Sydney 5 years ago, and moving to a new city with all the different health infrastructure and more than what I had at home was, yeah, really quite difficult to navigate. And so barriers definitely come from finding the service, what they do, what they offer, whether you're eligible to go, and yeah, a few other barriers as well that I think Sanya
got. Yeah.
Yeah, so we do know that there are a range of barriers, as you say, both from hearing from young people and also through some recent research. So in 2018, New South Wales Health commissioned the Access 3 study, which looked at the experiences of particularly vulnerable young people in terms of the way that they access health services and navigate the health system. And there were some really clear barriers that were identified through that were really helpful, because that then helps us address those barriers. So cost is a really huge one that was identified, and also understanding what costs there will be. It's often not explicit to young people. It's really hard to find that information out. As Anna said, you know, websites are often very unclear. That information isn't always there up front. As Anna said, the complexity of the system. And young people will be telling us that they just don't know about the services that exist there. We know there are lots of great services for young people, but the young people who need them often don't know about them. Difficulties making appointments and getting to services is something that the research found was a key issue. Concerns around confidentiality for young people, and I think that's particularly true of access, you know, sexual health services. There can be a real stigma felt by young people, and particularly in that earlier age group, concerns around what information might be shared with parents or caregivers, and similarly, not feeling welcome and possibly feeling judged by health providers when using services. And again, that's really key with sexual health services, young people feeling like they can't perhaps be honest about sexual behaviour or preferences or things that we can address through sometimes even just really small adjustments to the way that we deliver services.
And what are some other changes that services can make or have made within the Southeast Sydney Local Health District?
Yeah, kick it off.
Yeah, sure. So flexibility, as mentioned by Stanya, is super important. A lot of the time, young people are in school and aren't able to access services during times when they're open. So having flexibility around appointment times, being able to be open for longer as well, is really something that can be helpful in making a service more accessible. I think the introduction of telehealth has been fantastic. It allows you to not have to go into the service and experience all the different barriers that come up there, and quick and easy to fit into the life. And look, my life is crazy hectic. I try to fit in so many different things as I can in a day. And so being able to quickly slot in a call with a GP and get a digital prescription is super great. So definitely having that flexibility for young people and understanding why that's important when it comes to your health and not being able to actually see the places that you can and where you need to go, it's, can be a big issue. So flexibility is definitely an area that could be looked at. Technology as well. So mentioned how websites need to be accessible, and so you need to be able to easily book appointments. The worst is when I try to book appointments online and then they say, you're not eligible, you have to call us. I'm like, oh gosh. And then I call and they're like, oh, you have to come in for this appointment. And that's that triaging and pushing through is really frustrating. So having all the information that you need online in a digestible way is super important. Text messages as well, reminders for appointments are really great thing for young people. My life is on my phone, so take that with me everywhere. So keeping everything to do with healthcare, so like digital prescriptions and things, is super important. And a lot of health services actually don't allow for that. So any capacity to bring that into the service is super good.
Yeah, and these principles are apply to most people, but particularly to any priority population as well, very much for young people. Accessibility in terms of just finding services, wayfinding, a lot of our services are based in hospitals, which are notoriously difficult to navigate. Just wayfinding and information about the service being accessible is really important.
Yeah, in terms of the environment of a health service, it really makes a difference when it's not all white and clinical and scary to go into. So welcoming staff who are friendly and smile, just have a nice smile. I feel like that's for absolutely anyone, but especially for young people when they're feeling nervous, or it may be the first time that they're going to that particular clinic, and maybe first time going alone without parents, having someone there who's there to help guide them through that process from when you walk into the door, so those at the reception, to the actual GP and how they interact with you as well. I think visually, spaces, if they have posters on the walls, are colourful, have a TV, that's always good, have music playing. All of those little things make such a big difference, because it makes use of the space a bit more. Waiting for an appointment is the worst possible thing ever, and then you're sitting there in awkward silence with other people. So having things there that can distract you and keep you occupied while you're waiting for the appointment, that's really great as well. Wi-Fi, if that's available. No, it's not available in a lot of places, but that's always nice too.
And it's particularly true, isn't it, when you're perhaps feeling, if a young person's feeling really anxious or nervous about an appointment, sexual health again, if it's for an issue around mental health or alcohol or other drugs, perhaps some of those more confronting issues where young people are already maybe reluctant to walk in the door, just being at ease in that moment when you're first there is so important. I think having things like collaborating and having partnerships with families is really important, with local schools, with youth and community services can really facilitate that kind of streamline referral process, can facilitate young people in those other settings having information about the health services so that can be shared on both sides. And providing opportunities for young people to participate. So Anna talked before about the PAC group as an example. So when services either have perhaps their own consumer groups or they consult with other consumer groups and can involve young people in the development of resources or the co-design of programs to provide feedback in an ongoing way about the services that they provide, that helps services to continue to get better and to continue to meet the needs of the young people that they see. And this is for services that see young people all the time, but also mainstream services that youth health might not be their core business, but we know that all services see young people, whether they're a pediatric service or an adult service. So even if it's not all the time, they could be doing these things with young people. And I think also having staff who are really well trained in youth health issues, in understanding kind of the developmental needs and stage that this cohort are experiencing, providing that developmentally appropriate healthcare is really important. And that's part of my role in our health district, is often training health staff around that engagement with young people and understanding their unique needs.
Yeah, great. And I guess one of the things at SSHC, one of our consumers recommended putting a phone charger in the waiting room. And it's just been really great walking past and, you know, seeing people using it. And that's not just for young people, but anybody who might be running out of charge at the end of the day.
Absolutely. I guess I was just going to say that I mentioned the youth health training that we provide in southeastern Sydney, and that's something that would be provided to health staff in most LHDs. But there are also some really great resources for other health settings around working with young people. And I think particularly GPs are often the first port of call. They're often the gatekeepers to the health system for young people. And, you know, we know that young people see GPs in all over the place. So there are some really great resources for GPs who are interested in building some skills in working with young people. New South Wales Health, Youth Health website has some really great resources there. I know a lot of primary health networks will provide resources for GPs and sometimes some training for GPs around working with young people, and particularly in the sexual health space. The PlaySafe Pro website, which is run by StipU, has some fantastic resources for GPs, particularly working with young people who are seeing them for sexual health needs.
And there's just been some new resources released from PlaySafe for GPs as well, so I'll pop those in the podcast description.
I think in terms of what is done well for youth friendliness is looking at any youth health services that exist. Headspace is the peak example of what is super youth friendly for a service in terms of the atmosphere, the staff that are trained, any service which sees a lot of young people usually know what they're doing and what the needs are and can adapt that and are more likely to hear from young people and want feedback on what they're doing and how they're engaging with young people. So yeah, Headspace is a fab example of that. Examples of what needs to be improved, I think, for most GP type settings, which I know a lot of my mates, they go for sexual health issues just straight to a GP. It's really not great. I think there's not a lot of comfort in talking to young people from the GP around sexual health, and even just asking to get a test can be really difficult sometimes. And when I know more about it than them and what needs to be done and what questions you should be asking, it gets a little bit frustrating. So I think definitely there's room for growth in GP areas when you go with any sexual health questions.
Yeah, I think any model that has somewhat of a one-stop shop kind of model for young people. We don't have a dedicated youth health services in southeastern Sydney, but a lot of local health districts have a youth health service where a young person can come in the door and they can have counselling and they can receive health information, and there's health promotion programs, and they can have an STI test and they can see a GP, and there might be an oral health clinic, really somewhere that one-stop shop model is really fantastic. But a way that we do that in southeastern Sydney and, for example, outreach clinics, so we have a lot of our mainstream services like sexual health and oral health and drug and alcohol who will have clinics in a youth-friendly setting like Headspace, and that's a really great way if there isn't a specific youth health service that we can provide that really targeted youth-friendly care. And I guess in terms of improvements, I think we talked before about some of those principles of youth-friendly healthcare around use of technology and flexibility. And unfortunately, health as a structure can be pretty rigid. And sometimes I certainly know that talking to clinicians who would love to do things really differently, but the confines of our structures sometimes are a bit limiting. But that said, there are lots of examples where we have been able to do things differently. And I think slowly, we are kind of breaking out of those structures where it best meets the needs of communities and clients.
Yeah.
Social media is often raised as being something which makes services more youth-friendly. What's working well in this space and what could be improved?
Yeah. So look, I think particularly in the health promotion space, there are lots of fantastic examples of this being done really, really well. Sydney Sexual Health Centre is a great example. I think statewide, there are some fantastic websites. There's PlaySafe for sexual health, and there's Your Room for alcohol and other drugs. These are New South Wales Health websites, and some of them, like PlaySafe, have social media accounts. New South Wales Health was doing really great work on TikTok up until recently. And this is something that a lot of community youth organisations and some of the peak bodies and NGOs do really, really well. But I think we know that it's something that really needs dedicated resources. So it needs staff time. It's time consuming. Often when there's a dedicated role, it can be done really well because it really does take time and effort and a lot of knowledge and skills. And I think particularly I can speak for myself as an adult working in this space. It's a bit of a scary kind of unknown space for a lot of people, and particularly in government organisations. Obviously, we can be pretty risk averse to doing things new and differently. So there are challenges with it, but there are lots of fantastic examples of it being done really well.
And I guess something topical at the moment is the banning of TikTok on government devices. So as a young person, what do you think about this?
I think, look, the ban of government web pages not being able to use TikTok sucks, but overall, I don't think too many young people were hitting those platforms anyway, because you got to be searching up for New South Wales Health or looking for those health topic. I think the great thing about TikTok is that so much content is just produced, and it's sometimes individual creators or hearing from other people's experiences. That content is ones that I look at more. I think definitely Instagram, a lot of my mates, I don't have Insta, but a lot of my mates use that and send a lot of things through to me, and having a lot of informative content on there is good. But the key issue with that and not having government bodies and having actual reputable sources of that information is that hearing it from anyone, sometimes the things I get sent, I'm like, oh, is that right? I don't know if I should be trusting it and things. So, I mean, social media is really great to share that and learn from other people, and especially learning from other people's experiences in healthcare settings. But I think it's a shame that it can't be used by the bodies that know it. PlaySafe is doing a fab job and always does with their content. So I don't know, a bit of a shame about that ban. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I suppose there's also the risk of misinformation. So some of the stuff that's out there might not be correct because it's not overseen by a health body.
Yeah, some of the peers in our group were getting involved in doing TikToks before the ban came up, or trying to just make content in general to be put on social media, because, yeah, hearing from peers is the best way to do it, and everyone is on social media. What we have been doing on social media, or we have done previously, is using Facebook page, which really isn't the best platform to create content, but we created a lot of infographics and other things, and getting the really creative peers in our groups who study design or other things like that to create that content for it and share key messages in a fun, digestible way. So yeah, the
our group PIAC has been involved in a few of those different things. I was more behind the scenes, and these are the health messages that we can put in and the planning side of it.
Yeah, well, I guess, yeah, looking now for the next opportunity to use that content. Because really, I mean, we absolutely know that is where young people are getting information. And as you say, we're up against a huge amount of user-generated content. We're never going to be able to create more content than that is out there. But we really need to be using these channels to provide health information, because that might be the only source for many young people.
Mm-hmm. And we've touched on a few of these, but what are some resources that might be helpful for services to know about?
Yeah, so we've mentioned a couple of them so far, but I guess just a few to mention that I certainly find really useful, and I know others working in the space do. I mentioned the youth health section of the New South Wales Health website. There's a huge amount of resources on there, stuff around working with young people in the youth health space, resources for young people and to guide clinicians around confidentiality. It's also the space where kind of all the policies and guidelines that really guide our work in youth health are held. The youth health framework can be found there and other related policies. Ask for Health is a new website. It's delivered by Youth Action, which is the peak body for youth services and commissioned by New South Wales Health. And it's actually, that website came out off the back of the Access 3 study that I mentioned earlier that found that young people really need support navigating the health system and with health literacy. So it's a website that young people can access and really pick absolutely any health topic that they want and get some information about it. So for example, if they want to know how does it work to go see a GP, they can go and they can read some information about what is bulk billing, how do I make an appointment, what can I expect when I see a GP, what issues can I ask my GP about. So that's a really useful one. We mentioned PlaySafe, which is dedicated to all things sexual health, and that's an amazing website. Your Room for alcohol and other drugs. For mental health, there's some lots and lots of fantastic online resources, but Reach Out and Headspace, I would say, would probably have a huge amount of resources there, and also provide options for online treatment and support for people who are interested in youth participation and maybe ways that they can build that into their service delivery. The Advocate for Children and Young People have some fantastic resources there. And I guess we talked about PIAC as a resource in southeastern Sydney, and many local health districts will have a youth council or a youth advisory committee, or there are youth advisory committees with all local council or with a specific youth services. Headspace centres have youth reference groups. So I think if you're interested in incorporating and bringing in the voice of young people into your service delivery, yeah, definitely recommend engaging with a local group of young people that can support you with that.
Super important to have good engagement in health services when you're a young person. It's such a pivotal time of if you have a bad experience, like, I'm not going to go back. There's been so many GPs. I don't really have a stable GP. There's one who I've been seeing for a few times. But yeah, I go and see a GP and I'm like, well, never again for you. And just realizing how instrumental they can be in shaping a young person's healthcare and experiences and perceptions around healthcare, and especially then thinking about sexual health and feeling whether you're comfortable to then go out and talk about and actually advocate for your own health. It's just, yeah, a really, really important age group that I feel like is overlooked a lot. And we have to do it all for the first time by ourselves. So having that support and that knowledge coming from healthcare providers is super important.
Thanks. Yeah, and I think my messages for health professionals and healthcare providers, just to reiterate some of the things we've talked about, just be really open and flexible, listen to young people and provide opportunities for them to tell you how they want to be cared for, how they want their services to be delivered. And I think just keep yourself up to date with current youth health issues, educate yourself on developmentally appropriate healthcare and the needs of young people.
You've been listening to the Sydney Sexual Health Centre podcast, where we've been talking about making services more youth-friendly. To stay up to date with latest information on sexual health, you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. The links are in the description. And if you like the podcast, please share and subscribe.